Thanks, Karen. It's 5:07 on Wall Street. We're at 65 degrees in Central Park, and we've got the overnight construction starting to clear out on the inbound George Washington Bridge. We'll see how your ride's looking shortly. First, John Tucker's here with what else is going on in New York and around the world. Good morning, John.
And Nathan, Governor Kathy Hochul has lifted the state's mask requirement for public transit, removing one of the last remaining government mandates of the COVID-19 pandemic.
We're watching global trends. We're watching for variants. We're watching for any updates and vaccines. But we do believe that we're in a good place right now, especially if New Yorkers take advantage of this booster.
Hochul making the announcement before receiving the Omicron-specific booster. Masks will still be mandatory in healthcare settings and at adult care facilities. Uber will begin rolling out yellow taxi rides in New York City. More in this report from Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger.
It's a long-awaited effort to help ease a driver shortage and pressure on fares. The Big Apple's iconic yellow cabs have started to appear on the ride-hailing platform for a randomized majority of active New York City riders, allowing them to book trips and taxis through the Uber app. Under an agreement, Uber customers can hail a taxi at the same price as an UberX, and they'll see the fare up front before requesting a trip. Drivers' earnings will initially be based on the City Taxi and Limousine Commission mandated rates, which are close to $32 an hour. Jeff Bellinger, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Abortion remains legal in Michigan after a judge permanently blocked enforcement of a 91-year-old ban that could have become law following the Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe versus Wade. The ban, which was opposed in a separate lawsuit by Governor Gretchen Whitmer, was on hold after a temporary ruling. President Biden will host a call with allies today about the next steps in support of Ukraine against Russian invasion. In the meantime, the Pentagon has sent Ukraine its most accurate artillery shell, the GPS-guided Excalibur, a satellite-guided weapon. It can hit within 7 feet of its target. The Excalibur was first used in Iraq in 2007 in the high-profile killing of an al-Qaeda leader. And California's power grid once again didn't break despite being stretched to the limit as a punishing heat wave continues to test the state's ability to keep the lights on. Well, today promises to be another tense standoff with demand forecast near a record high and the California Independent System Operator already declaring an emergency watch. Global news 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take. We're powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm John Tucker. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Thank you, John. Coming up to 5:10 on Wall Street, time for the Bloomberg Sports Update. Good morning, John Stasher.
Good morning, Nathan. Let's play two. Mets and Yankees both made up rainouts with doubleheaders and both had sweeps. Both had their aces on the mound for the Nightcaps and provided them with plenty of offense, and that's not normally the case when Jacob DeGrom pitches, but DeGrom and the Mets beat the Pirates 10-0 after taking the opener 5-1. So good news on the field, not as good off it as Max Scherzer was placed on the injured list with that achy side. At the stadium, Garrett Cole on the mound for the second game, and the Yanks beat the Twins 7-1. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa with a grand slam. The opener included yet another home run by you-know-who.
The 2-1. Swung on, hit in the air to deep left. That ball is high. It is far. It is gone. It's amazing, and I mean that. Absolutely. He's done it again. How does he do it?
That's John Sterling, WFAN. So now 55 home runs for Aaron Judge. The Yanks won 5-4, scoring twice in the 12th inning. Another incredibly late night slash early morning at the U.S. Open, 48 hours after Carlos Alcaraz won his fourth round match at 2:23 a.m. Alcaraz was back, finishing his quarterfinal victory over Yannick Sinner at 2:50 a.m. The match went 5 hours, 15 minutes, so he's into the semis to play Francis Tiafoe, who's doing things no American man has done since Andy Roddick. Tiafoe, the first from the U.S. to be a Grand Slam semifinalist since 2009, first to do it at the Open since 06, and Tiafoe is the first African-American men's Open semifinalist since Arthur Ashe 50 years ago. They'll play the women's semifinals today, and the NFL season kicks off tonight in L.A., Rams and Bills. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan?
All right, John, thank you. S&P futures right now down 1 point. Dow futures down 10. NASDAQ futures a little change to the downside. The 10-year Treasury is up 3/32, the yield 3.25%. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Bloomberg 11:30 weather, mostly sunny with a high near 80 today. We'll be in the low 80s with sunshine starting tomorrow and all weekend long, actually. Right now, it's 65 degrees in Central Park.
markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. European stocks are pairing early gains as investors brace for potential unprecedented monetary policy tightening by the region's central bank later today. U.S. stock index futures, they are a little changed just after the S&P 500 and NASDAQ rose more than 1.8% yesterday. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures, again, little change, and so are Dow and NASDAQ futures. The DAX in Germany is down 0.1%, while the CAC in Paris is up 0.2%, and the FTSE 100 is up 0.3%. 10-year Treasury up 0.33, yield 3.25%. Yield on the 2-year, 3.44%. NYMEX crude oil is down 0.4% on 35 cents at $81.57 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.1%, up $1.90 at $17.29.80 an ounce. The euro is at 0.9999 against the dollar, British pound 1.1492, and the yen 144.01. Bitcoin is down 0.8% at $19,230. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's John Tucker with more on what's going on around the world. John.
And Karen, police in Memphis, Tennessee have arrested a 19-year-old after four people were killed, three others wounded, in a random shooting spree that was live streamed on Facebook. President Biden holding back on the decision to scrap any Trump-era tariffs on China imports. And the Pentagon has sent Ukraine its most accurate artillery shell. The satellite-guided weapon can hit within several feet of a target. Sports, Yankees beat the Twins in both games of a doubleheader. Mets also winners, beating the Pirates both games of their doubleheader. The A's lost to the Braves. The Giants lost to the Dodgers. The Red Sox lost to the Rays. The Orioles lose to the Blue Jays. The Nationals lose to the Cardinals. And the NFL season kicks off tonight with the Bills heading to Los Angeles to take on the Super Bowl champion Rams. Global News 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm John Tucker. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Okay, John, thank you. It's 519 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. And speaking of Los Angeles, that is where the U.S. is set to host the first gathering of Asian nations on an economic agreement that the White House hopes will be a counter to China's rising influence in the region. It seems there is no end to tensions between the U.S. and China. So we want to bring in our first guest this morning, James Mager, China economy editor for Bloomberg News, joining us live from our bureau in Beijing. Good morning, James. So what more do we know about this 13-nation summit that's kicking off today?
So this is, you know, like an attempt by the Biden administration, I guess, to, as you said in your introduction, to counter the rising economic power of China. I mean, all the nations in Asia, especially the ones that are coming to this meeting, for them, China is the largest trading partner that they have. You know, it buys an increasing amount of goods from Australia, from South Korea, from Japan, from India, and the failure of the decision by the Trump administration to pull out of the TPP has sort of left the U.S. trade policy and economic policy towards these nations a little bit adrift. So this is the attempt by the Biden administration to sort of bring that back on course and to try to increase economic connections between, you know, the countries of Asia and the U.S. It isn't really a traditional trade negotiation. This meeting that's happening in Los Angeles starting today is sort of an agreement to start talking. The countries are going to meet and they're going to say, like, these are the big buckets of things we'd like to do. Where can we cooperate? Where can we not cooperate? And obviously some of those countries are not going to cooperate in all of these areas. You know, the areas we're looking at are trade, supply chains, decarbonization, and then taxes and corruption. And one of the things that's different about this from a normal trade negotiation is that it's basically pick or choose. Like, some countries may decide to just cooperate on trade. Some countries may decide just cooperate on anti-corruption or tax harmonization, that kind of thing. So it's very much an ad hoc kind of process. And that, part of the reason for that is that it's impossible to get a trade deal through Congress. The Biden administration, the Trump administration before it, has shown that it's impossible for the U.S. Congress to vote, or sorry, the U.S. Senate to vote to approve any kind of trade deal. And so the administration's effort is to have this kind of talk shop which doesn't need congressional approval.
Yeah, so you've laid out some of the challenges there. But what is China's influence looking like right now, given all the muscle flexing that's been going on really ever since House Speaker Nancy Pelosi came to Taiwan last month?
I mean, I think China's muscle, at least on economic and trade, goes back well before the recent tensions with Taiwan. If you look at, you know, the growth, the rise of China's economy over the last 20 years, it's gone from being basically a minnow in global trade to being the world's largest trading country now. As I said, it's the largest trading partner for all of the countries that are represented in Los Angeles today and tomorrow. So it's the world's second largest economy. It's a huge source of demand for many, many countries in the world. It's a huge source of imports, including for the U.S., for many kinds of manufactured goods. So China's weight in the region is because it is such a massive economy, and it is close to all of these countries. Obviously, it's much closer to from, you know, Thailand or Australia or Japan to China than it is to the U.S. So, you know, it has that economic heft. And at the moment, I guess you could say that the U.S. still has some areas in which it's stronger than China in the region. It's still a much larger investor into many of these countries. You know, it's by far the largest investor into Australia, into Thailand, and into other countries in the region. But, you know, the growth of trade between China and ASEAN countries, for example, is much, much faster than the growth of trade between the U.S. and those countries. China has been able to sign free trade deals with all those countries. And so the direction of trade is obviously going to be much more focused on, you know, trade between ASEAN or trade between Asian nations and China more than it would be on the focused on trade between the U.S. and those countries. So, you know, this agreement is an attempt by the Biden administration to try and shift that focus a little bit back to the U.S., you know, and shift it away from the direction it's been going, you know, over the past 20 years as China has, you know, as its economy has grown so large.
Yeah, well, it's going to be very interesting to watch whether this economic pressure put to bear on China by the U.S. Bears fruit, given some of the even further geopolitical military potential tensions that we've seen in recent weeks. James Mager, our China economy editor for Bloomberg News, thanks for joining us this morning, giving us more insights on this Indo-Pacific Economic Framework for Prosperity conference kicking off today, a two-day conference. Set to begin in Los Angeles. Looking ahead to the market open, futures are little changed ahead of an ECB decision this morning. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Bloomberg 11:30 weather. Sunshine today with a high near 80 degrees. Will be sunny, low 80s tomorrow and Saturday. We'll call it partly sunny Sunday, but still warm with highs in the low 80s. Right now, 65 in Central Park.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130. To Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 991. To Boston, Bloomberg 1061. To San Francisco, Bloomberg 960. To the country, Sirius XM Channel 119. And around the globe, the Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We're just about 4 hours away from the open of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. We begin overseas, where the European Central Bank holds its first monetary policy meeting since July. Economists expect the ECB to deliver a rate hike as high as 75 basis points. But Bloomberg's Maria Tadeo says it's still unclear exactly how high they'll go.
When you look at the 75 basis points camp, what they argue is there is a window now to hike, and you should do it quickly, decisively, and take swift action. This is now about the credibility of the institution. On the flip side, when you look at the 50 basis points camp here, what they argue is that you could find yourself in a situation where you're hiking aggressively at the same time your economy about to enter potentially a recession and facing an energy crisis.
Bloomberg's Maria Tadeo says no matter how high the ECB goes, the central bank will definitely raise rates today.
Well, back here in the U.S., Karen, we're watching for comments from Fed Chair Jay Powell. He is scheduled to take part in a moderated discussion hosted by the Cato Institute this morning. Stick with us for live coverage of the remarks starting around 9 a.m. Wall Street time on Bloomberg Radio and Television.
Well, overseas, Nathan, we have a big move in geopolitics. The U.S. is warning about Chinese threats to Taiwan. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan says he and congressional leaders are working to alter policy toward the island in light of threats from Beijing.
There are elements of that legislation with respect to how we can strengthen our security assistance for Taiwan that are quite effective and robust that will improve Taiwan's security. There are other elements that give us some concern.
And National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan made the comments on the David Rubenstein Show, Peer-to-Peer Conversations. Get the program later this month on Bloomberg Television, September 21st at 9 p.m. Eastern.
The U.S. is also taking aim at China on the economic front, Karen. The White House is hosting its first gathering of Asian nations over an economic agreement aimed to counter Beijing's rising influence in the region. Bloomberg's Stephen Engel in Hong Kong says the agreement is not traditional.
It's more focused on ways to build trade with these 14 nations, to improve supply chains, to build clean energy initiatives, decarbonization as a main goal, and also the infrastructure to do that. Also deals with taxes and anti-corruption.
Bloomberg's Stephen Engel says critics of the pact think it's too vague and want more details.
And we're keeping an eye on the yen this morning, Nathan. It's had big swings overnight, weaker then stronger, now weaker again. There are reports that officials in Japan are meeting for the first time since June to discuss the situation. The yen at 144.07 against the dollar. And this is Bloomberg.
Thanks, Karen. 533 on Wall Street, 65 degrees in Central Park. Eastbound BQE is getting heavy into Cabman Plaza. We'll get you the details in traffic. First, John Tucker with what else is going on in New York and around the world. John.
And Nathan, one of the last remaining government mandates of the pandemic has now been lifted. More this morning in this report from Bloomberg's Lisa Mateo.
New York Governor Kathy Hochul has lifted the state's mask requirement for public transit. It comes after months of confusion among commuters by varying national, state, and local rules on where face coverings are required. The governor says COVID numbers are stable, putting the state in a good place now. Effective immediately, masks will no longer be required for mass transit, correctional facilities, and shelters. Mask mandates remain in effect at nursing homes, as well as other health care facilities regulated by the state. Mask compliance on New York City's subways, buses, and commuter trains had waned over the past few months. Lisa Mateo, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Another mass shooting in Memphis. Four people were killed, three others injured in a shooting spree that held the city hostage for hours last night. Police say 19-year-old Ezekiel Kelly drove around randomly shooting people while live streaming on Facebook. He was taken into custody. Court records show he had a previous first-degree murder charge, but pleaded down to aggravated assault. He served just 11 months of a three-year sentence. Memphis Mayor Jim Strickland was outraged and blamed a lenient judicial system.
I'm tired of our police officers arresting the same people over and over and over, and those people committing violent acts.
The shooting comes the same week Memphis police found the body of a missing teacher, Eliza Fletcher. The second suspect wanted in the stabbing rampage in Canada has died. Miles Sanderson was taken into custody yesterday, but police say he went into medical distress shortly after and died. Miles and his brother Damien had been on the run in Saskatchewan since Sunday, accused of a stabbing spree that killed 10 and left 19 others injured. Damien was found dead in a field near the stabbing sites on Monday. President Biden will hold a video call with allies today. The talks will focus on the next step to support Ukraine against Russia's invasion. The Pentagon, meantime, has sent Ukraine its most accurate artillery shell, the GPS-guided Excalibur, according to budget documents. And a judge has sharply criticized Elon Musk for not properly turning over text messages that could be evidence in Twitter's lawsuit seeking to force the billionaire to complete his proposed $44 billion buyout. The judge said there were glaring deficiencies. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm John Tucker. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
John Tucker, thank you. Almost 5:36 on Wall Street. John Stashower is the Bloomberg Sports Update.
Thanks, Nathan. When the Yankees are slumping, bring on the Twins. It's a team the Yanks always seem to dominate, and the Yanks with a doubleheader sweep now go for a four-game series sweep tonight. They're doing it with a lineup that had five guys who have spent most of the season in Scranton, and the Yanks still won a wild opener 5-4. They scored twice in the 12th inning. That's Waldo Cabrera had the walk-off hit, ending an 0-for-25 slump. Earlier, an Aaron Judge home run, his 55th. Second most in Yankee history, moving past Mickey Mantle and Alex Rodriguez, and now trailing only Roger Maris. Nightcap had a grand slam from Isaiah Kiner-Falefa and Aaron Hicks, who has struggled so mightily with a three-run double, and the Yanks won 7-1. Mets also with a doubleheader sweep in Pittsburgh, first 5-1 and then 10-0, though Max Scherzer's been put on the injured list with an achy side. The hope is he misses only one start, no more than two. They're down to the final four at the U.S. Open women's semifinals. Today, tonight, no Americans left. Jess Pegula lost last night to the top seed Iga Swiatek. There is an American left on the men's side. That had not been the case at the Open since Andy Roddick in 2006. Francis Tiafoe won again. Tomorrow, Tiafoe will face Carlos Alcaraz. He won his quarterfinal match with Yannick Sinner in five sets. The match went 5 hours, 15 minutes. It ended at 2:50 a.m. Alcaraz had won his previous match at 2:23 a.m. Rams and Bills kick off the NFL season tonight in L.A. The Jets made official that Joe Flacco will be their starting quarterback Sunday against Baltimore. Zach Wilson not ready to return from his knee injury. In fact, he might miss the first three games. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan?
John, thanks. 5:37 on Wall Street. Time for the Tri-State Business Report with Bloomberg's Ed Corey.
Manhattan home sales under $1 million sagged well below their pre-pandemic levels this summer. The number of properties for sale under $500,000 that entered contract in June, July, and August was 29% less than the average number for that period in the decade leading up to the pandemic. Bosses expect workers to start showing up more regularly at Manhattan offices that have been sparsely populated for more than 2 years. Jeff Blau, chief executive officer of landlord-related companies, thinks there will be a real push back to the office now that summer is ending. New York City is seeking bids from companies to operate its ferry system, a fleet of 38 boats that play a role in Mayor Eric Adams' plan to lure riders back to public transportation. NYC Ferry is used by 6 million travelers every year on routes that cover 70 nautical miles to all five boroughs. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey.
Thanks, Ed. 5:38 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Steve Potusk, and on KNX in Los Angeles, we're talking about Nexstar Media looking for new shows as it takes over the money-losing CW-TV network.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on KTRH in Houston. Crude has tumbled by almost $50 a barrel since peaking in March.
I'm Stephen Carroll on Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London. We've been reporting on the ECB's rate decision and the margin of the hike.
I'm Ed Corey on WTAM in Cleveland. I'm reporting the Browns, Jack Cleveland Casino, and the Thistledown Racino will be able to offer sports betting in January.
And those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. It's 5:39 on Wall Street.
The following is an editorial from Bloomberg Opinion.
This editorial was written by the Bloomberg editorial board. Liz Truss could hardly have picked worse circumstances under which to become the UK's new prime minister, even leaving aside the rain that delayed her inaugural speech this week. After all, she inherits potentially the worst economic crisis in a generation. Whether Truss exceeds expectations will depend on her willingness to abandon campaign slogans for pragmatic solutions. Truss will need to speak honestly about trade-offs and demonstrate an ability to compromise, especially on two major issues where she'll have to make early decisions, the cost of living crisis and UK-EU relations. Truss's task now is to restore confidence in the government's ability to manage crises at home while providing steady, stable leadership on the world stage. Not just Britons should wish her success. This editorial was written by the Bloomberg editorial board. For more Bloomberg opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPINGO on the Bloomberg terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
Listen for Bloomberg Opinion editorials every weekday at this time. Terminal customers can read more at OPIN Go. Sunshine near 80 today will be sunny low 80s all weekend long. 65 is the current temperature in Central Park.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business App, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
A And I'm Karen Moscow. European stocks pairing early gains with investors cautious before a potential jumbo interest rate hike by the region's central bank later today. U.S. stock index futures are a little changed, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day. On Bloomberg, S&P futures, again, little change. So are NASDAQ and Dow futures. The DAX in Germany is down about 0.2%. 10-year Treasury up 4/32, yield 3.24%, and the yield on the 2-year, 3.43%. NYMEX crude oil is down 0.4% or 36 cents at $81.59 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.2% or $3.70 at $17.31.50 an ounce. The euro is at now at 1 against the dollar. British pound 1.14. And the yen 143.93. And Bitcoin this morning is down about 1% at $19,190. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's John Tucker with more on what's going on around the world. John.
Good morning, Karen. The Pentagon has quietly sent Ukraine its most accurate artillery shell, the GPS-guided Excalibur. Memphis police say four are dead after a teenager shooting spree that was streamed live on Facebook. And California's power grid, once again, didn't break, despite being stretched to the limit as a punishing heat wave continues. Sports, Yankees beat the Twins, both games of a doubleheader. Mets also won, beating the Pirates in both games of their doubleheader. The A's lost to the Braves. Giants lose to the Dodgers. The Red Sox lost to the Rays. The Orioles lost to the Blue Jays. And the Nationals lost to the Cardinals. Also, the NFL season kicks off tonight with the Bills heading to Los Angeles to take on the Super Bowl champion Rams. Global News 24 hours a day on air on a Bloomberg Quick Take. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm John Tucker, and this is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Okay, John, thanks. It's 5:49 on Wall Street. Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak. Let's turn now to the nation's capital, where we're seeing some important moves in geopolitics and in the run-up to the midterms. Joining us now from our Bloomberg 99.1 studios in Washington, D.C., is Bloomberg Government Congressional reporter Jack Fitzpatrick. Jack, good morning. We've been reporting that the president is going to be holding a call later this morning to try to shore up support from allies in the war in Ukraine. What's the latest that we're hearing on that?
Yeah, it's going to be a video call. They haven't said exactly who's participating, but it's going to include some group of seven leaders, some NATO nation leaders, and others from the European Union. So a fairly broad group, though it seems Europe-centric. And of course, this comes in light of the news just this morning that the U.S. is bringing forth another $2 billion in military aid to Ukraine and other nearby nations affected by the invasion of Ukraine. So it seems to be another the White House re-upping their attempts to display unity, get a number of different countries on board in terms of backing Ukraine, in light of expected, economic struggles heading into the winter, energy prices become more important and potentially more painful. Also Liz Truss would be an interesting person to keep an eye on, as she is the new UK leader who has been fairly hawkish on Russia. But it'll be a video call that it would appear to take the same kind of rhetoric that you've heard before from the White House.
Yeah, it's interesting that you bring up the threat of an energy crunch getting even worse for Europe as they head into the winter. What's the level of concern that you're hearing in the White House about whether the U.S. is going to be able to hold the alliance together with Ukraine?
There's concern about that. At this point, it seems more to be something the White House and the Biden administration is warning about. It is not something that has appeared to shake the foundations of support for Ukraine at this point. I don't think the concern has risen to that level for the winter, but the economic pain that could come from higher energy prices, depending on how cold the winter is a very significant factor in this. In Washington, there is still a lot of support, a lot of bipartisan willingness to do more for Ukraine. The concern, as you just alluded to, that is, how widespread is that support? And how steadfast does it stay there throughout the winter? It is a concern, but it is not something that has fundamentally changed the politics of the Ukraine-Russia situation from the U.S.'s perspective.
And how about the support on Capitol Hill for Ukraine, Jack? I know that the White House is looking to include a lot more Ukraine aid in the stopgap spending bill that's under negotiation and I guess has to be passed before, what, the end of this month to keep the government from shutting down? Only about 30 seconds left here.
Yeah, September 30th, they've got to have a stopgap funding bill that'll probably run into December. The White House has asked for a number of additional funds, including $13.7 billion in Ukraine-related aid, and that is one of the few that has very clear bipartisan support on Capitol Hill. So there is a lot of willingness to add more money, significant more money, coming up soon from Congress for Ukraine.
Appreciate this, Jack. Thanks for joining us. Jack Fitzpatrick, our congressional reporter for Bloomberg Government, joining us from the nation's capital. Karen.
All right, Nathan, thank you. It is 5:53 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Law Report. Let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning from Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger.
Meta Platforms is being sued in a New York federal court by Meta Capital Management. The investment advisory service claims Meta's name infringes on its trademark. A federal lawsuit accuses GameStop of secretly wiretapping the chat feature on its website, then sharing transcripts with third parties for marketing purposes. A federal lawsuit was filed in California over the way HelloFresh handles renewals for its grocery subscription service. Plaintiffs say they were not notified about automatic renewals.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need, all on one legal research platform, including guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
All right, thanks, Jeff. Now another legal story we're watching. For the first time in more than 100 years, a judge has removed a public official from office under the Constitution's ban on insurrectionists holding office. A judge has ousted Coy Griffin, a county commissioner in Otero County, New Mexico, from his office for participating in the January 6th insurrection. For more, Bloomberg's June Grasso speaks to Noah Bookbinder, director of Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, a nonpartisan watchdog organization that sued for Griffin's removal on behalf of three New Mexico residents.
The judge's decision seemed pretty far-reaching, considering that Griffin had only been convicted of trespass, a misdemeanor. And the judge went on to rule for the first time that January 6th was an insurrection.
That's right. There were a couple of really, really significant parts of the judge's ruling. One was that, you know, this was the first time that a judge ruled that as a matter of law under the 14th Amendment, what happened on January 6th was an insurrection. And the other part was his finding that what Griffin did constituted participating in the insurrection. The judge specifically found that the fact that Griffin himself didn't engage in violence was not sufficient to say that he was not a participant in the insurrection because he had incited and encouraged the crowd. He was part of this crowd, that can be insurrection. And that's one of the ways that this case could have, you know, pretty broad application going forward.
Well, explain that, because this is a first. You know, he's the first person associated with the January 6th insurrection to be kicked out of office under the Constitution, but it's a state court judge. So what do you think the impact is?
Well, one of the things that it does is that it makes clear that this provision in the Constitution, which had not been enforced by a judge in over 150 years and had been kind of largely forgotten, that this is a provision that is still meaningful and can still be used. I think up until the judge's decision, it was kind of theoretical. It was something that, you know, people could point to, but it wasn't clear that it could be successfully applied in the modern day. And certainly as we looked at it, what people like Griffin engaged in on January 6th was exactly the kind of event that the framers of the 14th Amendment were worried about, and it ought to apply. And, you know, this was sort of proof of concept that a judge looking at that law, looking at the facts, could find it applicable here. And you're right, this is a state court finding. It's not binding precedent elsewhere in the country. But we think that it's going to have enormous persuasive value, both in terms of people thinking about whether they could bring an action to disqualify someone under the 14th Amendment who participated in insurrection, and also to courts thinking that, you know, this is kind of a plunge that they can take.
And that's Noah Bookbinder, Director of Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, speaking with Bloomberg's June Grasso. Catch more of that interview, plus analysis of the latest legal news, by subscribing to the Bloomberg Law Podcast or downloading the show at Bloomberg.com/podcast. Attorneys can find exceptional legal research and business development tools at BloombergLaw.com and on the Bloomberg Terminal at BLawGo. Futures this morning, they are little changed, and the 10-year Treasury up 6/32nd, yield 3.24%. The yield on the two-year, 3.43%. NYMEX crude oil is down 0.6% at $81.49 a barrel. Still ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak, we have a check on the business headlines and all the news you need to start your day. And this is Bloomberg.